Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for listening this morning. I know you could be sleeping, you know, after working a long week, but you chose to wake up and listen to this morning's show. This show, I think, is extremely important. There are so many people suffering in silence and secret, hoarding items that you may not even be aware of. It could be your coworker, it could be your neighbor, it could even be your child. You may be a spouse of someone who's hoarding and you're not sure how to deal with it or handle it. So this morning I thought that this was a very important show to have. I have two wonderful experts in the field. One of them is the dean of the School of Social Work at Boston University. She has conducted multiple research studies of obsessive compulsive disorder, panic and OC spectrum conditions, including body dysmorphic disorder and compulsive hoarding. She has received several grants from the National Institute of Mental Health to study OCD and hoarding. She has published over 180 articles, chapters, and books on anxiety, OCD, and related disorders. Some of her most recent books include Cognitive Approaches to Obsessive Compulsive Disorder, Compulsive Hoarding and Acquiring, Therapist Guide and Client Manual, and also Buried in Treasures, Help for Compulsive Hoarding. Good morning, Dr. Stecchetti. I'm sorry. Tell me again how to pronounce it.
It's Dr. Stecchetti.
Stecchetti. Thank you so
much.
That's
fine. Sure.
Also, we have a professional organizer, Geralyn Thomas. She is a member, past president of the National Association of Professional Organizers. She also founded Metropolitan Organizing in 2002 to help transform the lives of her clients. She has been on the Fine Living Network, South Africa's The Home Channel. She's also featured on A&E's TV show, Hoarders. Again, welcome professional organizer Geralyn Thomas.
Thank you.
So I want to start off, there was an article I found in Discover magazine. I think this is very telling of the, intensity or... I mentioned earlier to Geralyn, I felt claustrophobic when I've been in the presence of people who are hoarders. But this article was very touching to me. It's The Psychology of Hoarding. This is Discover magazine, is the October 2004 issue. Day after day, year after year, Patrice Moore received a load of mail, newspapers, magazines, books, catalogs, and random solicitations. Each day, the 43-year-old recluse piled the new with the old until the floor-to-ceiling stacks of disorganized paper nearly filled his windowless 10-by-10-foot apartment in New York City. In late December, the avalanche came, and Moore was buried standing up. He stood alone for 2 days until neighbors heard his muffled moaning. The landlord broke in with a crowbar. It took another hour for neighbors and firefighters to dig Moore out and get him medical help. Wow. I mean, is this a normal occurrence? I mean, I'll start off with Geralyn. You know, you're on the show Hoarders, and I've seen that show. How do you process that? I mean, how do you feel when you walk into the space of someone who's a hoarder?
Well, the first thing I do is I look around and try and assess, you know, are there safety issues? And most likely there are. They pile things up under their windows and stairwells and doors to the point if somebody needed to get in a hurry, their emergency exits are blocked. And also if they have animals or children in the house, a lot of times the piles are so high and people or animals get trapped under the things when there is sort of an avalanche of the clutter. So, yes,
wow.
There are dangers, and it can feel very claustrophobic.
I mean, it's a fire hazard. It's a health safety hazard. I remember seeing on one show they went into a woman's home, and she had more than, 15 cats. But then some of the cats actually were dead because
yes.
She had so many piles of stuff, boxes, papers, just all random assorted items, and as they cleared out, she had to leave. She was very almost, hyperventilating. She had to leave her house because she just couldn't take that they were cleaning, and then they found dead animals amongst the piles of things.
Yes, and often that's not the only thing you'll find. There's mold issues, bed bugs, dust mites, fleas, just a lot of health hazards. So you're correct. It is dangerous.
I want to bring the doctor into the conversation. Why does someone develop the compulsive hoarding? Where does it begin, or how does it start? Is it from a parent? Is it genetic? Is it environmental?
Probably a mixture of those things. We do know that hoarding runs in families, probably much more commonly than some other conditions. So the geneticists, although they haven't exactly determined how it works genetically, are pretty confident that there is some kind of genetic linkage. But what we don't really know is what is it that might be inherited that would contribute to hoarding. One possibility, for example, is that lots of people with hoarding have difficulty making decisions, and that makes it very, very hard for them to decide what to keep and what to get rid of, and if they do keep it, where to put it. So that's a problem for people with hoarding. That's a sort of a cognitive processing problem, if you will. There are also a number of other reasons why people begin collecting. And I should mention that this sort of problem actually starts in childhood or adolescence for many people, and then just gradually over time gets worse and worse until we see them in their middle-aged years with a much more serious problem, although I should mention that the avalanche situation that you described for Patrice Moore is probably the far end, is definitely the far end of the spectrum. So we will see people who have a serious hoarding problem, but not yet at that level of risk that Geraldine was talking about.
Now, you mentioned that you mentioned it started in adolescence. So if you're a parent, you know, I don't know if either of you have children, but I have a child and I'm trying to get her to clean her room, you know. At
right.
What point as a parent do you need to be concerned? You know, because children, you know, they have their toys, they have their books, they may have, you know, homework and clothes and sometimes things on the floor. At what point, though, as a parent, should you be concerned?
Well, I think the point is when you notice that their behavior is really pretty much out of line with their peers, because a messy room is just a messy room. But at the point at which you find that your adolescent daughter, let's say, can't part with anything, almost anything that comes into her possession, she has to hang on to. That's a problem, because most of us do learn pretty rapidly to throw things out, and we keep the things that we get sentimentally attached to, which is true for people who have a hoarding problem. It's just true in spades for many of them.
Do you think that more men or women have a compulsive hoarding? Does that gender play a role at all?
Not a big one. It appears that both men and women develop hoarding problems. When you look at some of the research that is epidemiological research to try to understand the frequency of the problem in the population,
mm-hmm.
more men than women are found to have hoarding. But if you look at people who are actually contacting us to try to get information and seek help, we typically see a bit more women than men.
Mm.
So my guess is it's pretty even in the population. I suspect that there are some differences in what people save. For example, you'll find more often that men will hang on to appliances that they think they can repair, objects that might go to something. Both men and women save information, a great deal of information.
Mm.
And I'm sure
if I may add one thing,
yeah.
Do you agree
yes,
with this, Dr. Specchetti, is that the way they acquire things, at least in what I'm finding, is a bit different. The Internet has allowed men to acquire and shop online, which is something that I'm seeing in my business. Men are acquiring more things online, where women are going out and acquiring them shopping.
That
now,
makes a lot of sense.
Is this an issue of people lacking love when they were children? I mean, are they trying to fill up some kind of void? Focus this to Geraldine. Is that something that you see, that people have some kind of emotional void?
Well, with all due respect, that's not really my area of expertise, so I would have
okay.
to put that back in the
all
doctor's
right, no
court.
Problem. Let me take that question.
Go ahead.
The truth is that we have just completed a research study that should really help us answer that question, but we have not finished analyzing those data. That said, however, I would speculate that indeed there are quite a number of people who have had at least a somewhat chaotic and perhaps not quite as organized and or affectionate household as we might want. On the other hand, there are plenty of exceptions to that, and I think both of us are familiar with that in the cases that we see. It's hard, very hard, to characterize this as having a single basis. I think there are many factors that contribute to hoarding.
Mm. Now, how do you approach someone who's a hoarder? I mentioned to Geraldine that I know several individuals who are hoarders, and they are so, like as you say, reluctant to give up of anything. One individual, I had to pull something out of her hand because she was digging in the trash. We were at a building, and we were trying to clean up different office spaces, and instead of her cleaning up, she was going into the trash and
yes.
pulling stuff out. And telling, well, this is useful. No, we can use this. I know what this can be used for something. And I'm like, no, this is trash. Throw it away. You know, how do you approach the person when they are in denial?
Geraldine, do you want to start that one?
I'll start it, and then I know it's going to end up in the doctor's ball court again.
Okay.
I wait until someone contacts me. Sometimes it's a family member. Sometimes it's the hoarder themselves. And it's usually that they have some upcoming event that they need to make progress. So sometimes they know that a home health care worker will be coming in to check on them, or they've been told by the city that they have to clean something up, or sometimes it's a matter of children, you know, adult children saying that you have to get help or we're going to turn you in or whatever, some kind of threat. When they do call me on their own, it's usually just that they're completely overwhelmed and out of any space in their home.
Mm.
On the TV show, of course, it's a little bit different. There is a deadline looming, some big catastrophic event if they don't declutter. But I don't work with folks unless they're willing to collaborate with a therapist as well as a team of organizers. So the clients that come to me usually have a mindset that they know people are going to come in and it's going to be more than one person that they're going to be meeting with and getting help from.
Now, looking forward to the doctor. How long does it take for the process? Does it, I mean, because people, things that I've seen on the hoarders and different articles I read, and also my personal experience, people's houses, there's so much stuff. I mean, does the person have to move out? Is it important that they actually take items out and put in the trash, or do they just let other people take items out?
It's absolutely critical that the person who has the hoarding problem participate in learning how not to acquire and also learning how to get rid of things, whether they're going to throw them out or recycle them or give them away or sell them, whatever. But they have to learn the skills necessary to enable them to do it and to help them change the beliefs that they hold that require them to hang on to this.
Mm.
If they don't do it, believe me, you will simply see the problem recur, and often within a year or even two, it'll be back to where it started.
And sometimes exacerbates it.
So how does someone who's a spouse, I mean, if you're a spouse of someone who hoards, I mean, you love this person, you don't want to leave them, but, I mean, it's overwhelming. You're living financially, emotionally, physically in terms of health, and we talked about mold issues. I mean, do you need to threaten your spouse that I'm going to divorce you?
Well,
do you deal with your spouse? Because that's a little different than like a friend or, you know, relative.
Yes, absolutely it is. And I think it's the spouse and the adult child are the ones who face this with greatest difficulty. And let me just say that there is no one-size-fits-all here. The only thing that I think is critically important is not to make empty threats. So if the person is at their wit's end, then I think that the threat they make has to be something that they decide they're prepared to follow through on. So if they want to move out and feel that they need to file for a divorce if certain behaviors don't happen, then so be it. That is, I think, a decision that each person must make. That said, it's also important to realize that treatment takes time. The skills that they don't have to be acquired. The beliefs that they hold now have to be shifted, and that takes time. And it also requires motivation and conviction that they could actually live differently. So any family member is probably best helped with some education about why people hoard and why in particular their family member hoards.
Mm.
And then with an understanding of what it would take for the person to improve.
So, Geralyn, how do you begin with a person? They call you, they say, you know, they're at their wits' end, or like you said, there's a large event or happening in their life, like a home health worker coming in, or maybe they need to have a party or something. What is the first thing you talk to them about? How do you evaluate where they are in the hoarding?
Well, usually I agree to meet with them in their home, and we walk around as best we can, and we look at things, and I try to listen for signals or clues about, you know, what's meaningful to them, why, what's their goal, you know, what do they hope to achieve working with an organizer. And then I sort of gently back into the idea that, you know, I can only help with the physical clutter, but in order to really make progress dealing with this challenge, they have to be willing to meet with a therapist. And then usually the hoarder will have a lot of concerns and uncertainties about what that process is like. So usually we spend a little bit of time explaining, you know, that I think it's best for them to, here's a couple names, read some websites, learn a little about the disorder. And I always try and prep people that this is going to be a very long and at times uncomfortable
situation.
You know,
yeah,
it's not done overnight, and there's going to be some moments of sheer terror and discomfort for them. But I do try to assure them that you'll live through this, that you have this team of people that are going to be very supportive and not do anything that you don't want done.
Now, go ahead. I was going to bring you in. I wanted to talk about medications and why they may work or not work in terms of treatment. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to underscore what Geralyn has said. We, in all of our treatment, both from the mental health perspective and the professional organizer, none of us would do anything that the person did not authorize us to do. And gaining their trust is a critical piece of this process. Back to the medication issue, what we know at this point is that most of the medications that often work well for other anxiety and depressive conditions like obsessive compulsive disorder and other types of mood-related problems don't work particularly well for hoarding. They haven't been studied fully, and there is at least one and probably two studies that might contradict that information, but they tend to be smaller studies. So at this point, we don't jump right away to recommending medication because we don't really have a clue what to recommend.
I'm assuming the person is dealing with some issues of depression and the issue of anxiety.
Depression is very common.
Yeah.
Social anxiety is common, as is generalized anxiety that people have. But again, so far, we don't have good medications that seem to work on those problems, or rather to work on the hoarding per se, although they may help mitigate the mood problems.
Now, is there some kind of chemical imbalance with a person who has compulsive hoarding? Is that something that's found in research?
Not that we know of at this point. We do know that the brain patterns from the fMRI scans are somewhat different than people who have other conditions like obsessive compulsive disorder or other anxiety and mood disorders. Again, you know, we need more research on that, but things look different for hoarders, which leaves us at a little bit of a loss of where to go from a medication point of view. And so most of the treatments that have been developed have been cognitive behavioral treatments, as well as the reliance on professional organizing and other strategies for assisting someone in their home.
Now, how long, doctor, would it take for someone, and I know you said individual, every case is individual, but in general, I mean, is it a three-month process, is it a six-month process?
No.
Does it take a year?
A year is a good starting place.
Wow. A year, okay.
Obviously, this depends a bit on the severity of the problem. And so I'm sure that Geralyn has a similar experience.
Oh, yeah.
When it's a milder problem, it can be 3 to 6 months. But if you have someone who's living in a situation with serious risk involved, so there's a lot of clutter and there's a lot of impairment, that's going to take more time. We typically provide 26 sessions at the base, and then we often find that people need more booster treatments as well. The hard part is ensuring that there's somebody who can go into the home, like a professional organizer or a coach who's going to work with a person who really can work side by side with them in their home, helping them declutter.
Now, Geraldine, is there a phone number someone can reach out to do if someone's listening today? They say, well, you know what, I'm at that point. I do want to get some help. How can they reach you via the phone? And also, I put your website in the chat screen.
Yes, they're welcome to call my office at 919-380-7718. And I usually return the calls myself, so the voicemail is confidential.
Good. And, Doctor, if someone is interested in, I know you work closely with the OC Foundation.
Yeah.
That website is ocfoundation.org. And is there a phone number also that someone can call?
I don't have a phone number with me for the OC Foundation. I'm sure it's on their website. It would be the website has referral strategies directly on it. And our group here at Boston University often will get some calls or emails from OCF when they need help finding additional people, and sometimes we can assist as well.
Let me see. I'm on the site now. The phone number for the OC Foundation, and that's the Obsessive Compulsive Foundation, is 617-973-5801. Again, 617-973-5801. Now, you were saying someone has to be at the point of, I need some help. But if it's a safety matter, and what's the difference between someone who's hoarding animals? I mean, you see these situations where people have, 30 cats or 50 dogs or birds or, I mean, what's the difference between someone who takes in other creatures and then just objects like papers and newspapers and old mail? Is there a difference? Either one of you, you could feel free to jump in.
The truth is that we don't actually know very much about the difference. The research that's been done on animal hoarding is extremely limited because usually people who have animals that are sick or in danger are at legal risk with the SPCA or the Humane Society. And so those individuals are often reluctant to come forward. They're often reclusive, uncomfortable, and so forth. They do often have a hoarding of objects problem, but I think the animal hoarding is probably a more difficult and perhaps a more complicated problem.
Well, now, they see the animal. I mean, this is a creature, and as a human, not everyone I know, empathy can vary between individuals, but you see the animal suffering. Is there some gap in that empathy that they don't see the animal suffering, not, starving or unclean? Do there's just some kind of gap? Why is that, do you know?
There are a couple of different, I think, types of animal hoarders. There's at least a couple of types that are really trying to help the animal and feel tremendous empathy and affection for the animal, but they have gradually lost control of the animal population. So often people in the neighborhood give them cats that are stray, for example, and then they cannot, over time, can't take care of them and are afraid to take them to a shelter for fear that they'll be killed. So those individuals really do have affection for their animals but can't handle them. And then over time, I think, just sort of fail to realize how bad the situation is for the animals themselves and for themselves.
Yes. Well, you said that the difficulty of decision-making is one of the key aspects. Now, that's interesting because Geraldine was talking about how she has contact with individuals who are hoarders, but on the outside in terms of their jobs, they're very highly functioning. Geraldine, what do you think is one of the worst situations you've seen in trying to help people who have compulsive hoarding?
Well, I'm a little bit reluctant to pinpoint any one situation. And, sometimes it's when you walk in and you see that a family can't sleep in their beds because of bed bugs, or another time somebody is just not using their house for what its intended purposes are. The living room, there's no living going on in there. The bed, they're not sleeping in. The kitchen hasn't been used in years to serve or prepare food. you know, that's heartbreaking. Or just a lot of times, I think what's most touching to me as an organizer is hearing people's stories. This just tears families apart. You know, people can't have their grandchildren in to visit, or they become very isolated. So they go to and from activities, but they don't ever have anyone in their house, and they feel like they've got this big, dark secret to hide. So the UPS person rings the doorbell, they never answer. It's just a very secretive, you know, isolating thing that they're living with.
Yeah. I want to mention that the doctor has several books that are out that if you're interested, Buried in Treasures, Help for Compulsive Hoarding, that's through Oxford University Press. She also has for therapists, Compulsive Hoarding and Acquiring, a Therapist Guide and Client Manual. That's also Oxford University Press. And then Cognitive Approaches to Obsessive Compulsive Disorder. How did you get interested in studying this area of psychology?
Through my work with Dr. Randy Frost, who's at Smith College, and I'll mention that he and I, it'll be a Frost and Steckity book, have another book coming out soon, very soon, by Harcourt, which will be called Stuff, Hoarding and the Meaning of Things. And that book is intended for the general public to really describe and provide us a context through a whole series of cases that I think are illustrative of the range of reasons and symptoms of this most difficult problem.
So now, are there other organizations that you are aware of that can help? We mentioned the OC Foundation, Geraldine, your organization. There's also childrenofhoarders.com.
Yes.
That was a very interesting site that I researched for people who, you know, are children of hoarders. And I'm sure that, as you said, this breaks families apart and it isolates them from their parents. And also affects the children's relationship with other children because they can't bring people to their house.
Absolutely.
Because of their parents hoarding, you know?
Yeah. Another website that clients have felt a lot of relief just being with like-minded people is Messies Anonymous. That's a website that several clients of mine read. And Reclaiming Dignity is another one. Those are places where they can go and talk freely about their challenges and what's going on in their life and have a lot of people with similar challenges on those boards.
Well, I think this is an ongoing issue. I would love to have you back at a later time because, as you said, the treatment takes, you said a starting point is a year. So if someone's listening today and they say, you know what, today is my day, I want to try to move forward, it's still going to take them possibly a year, depending on where they are in this disorder. I really appreciate you guys taking the time out of your morning to speak about the issue. If anyone is listening, please make today the day that you start to reach out for help. There are people who understand what you're going through, are empathetic, sympathetic, both, you know, to what's going on, and they want to help you move forward. If you are not sure whether or not you're a hoarder or not, please go to these different websites. Some of them have guidelines and little tests you can take to say, well, you know, where are you? You know, maybe you're just a pack rat, maybe you just collect a couple magazines. But I think a couple magazines is different than 300 magazines, you know. So please take a time to reach out to Geraldine Thomas or the dean at the Boston University School of Social Work, the OC Foundation, childrenofhoarders.com. Thank you so much, ladies, for joining me. I want to definitely extend an invitation for you to come back at another date and time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I want to let our listeners know that I'm going to be having a second show this afternoon at 12 p.m. With an international circus performer from Germany. He'll be calling in from Germany and talking about his performance at a variety of circuses in Italy, France, Ringling Brothers in the United States. Also, he is an entertainment agent for other circus performers around the globe, Russia, Holland, France, China. His name is Samson Power. So if you're listening, come back at 12 p.m. Eastern, and you can talk with him about his great adventures in the circus. And also, if you're interested in getting an agent, he might be able to help you out. Again, the call-in number is 646-929-0368. Again, 646-929-0368. Again, that's going to be at 12 p.m., so please call back. And next week, I'm going to be having Khadija Kareem. She's a wonderful filmmaker talking about the Texas Bounty series. So I'll hopefully see you at 12 or next Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. Thank you very much.